Parikshitah.
Parikshitah.
Of King Parikshit. Atah. Thus. Rajashe. Of the king who was the Rishi among the kings. Janma. Birth. Karma. Activities. Vilapanam. Deliverance. Sangstam. Renunciation of the world. Cha. And. Panduputranam. Of the sons of Pandu. Vakshe. I shall speak. Krishna Katha Udayam, that which gives rise to the transcendental narration of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, translation. Siddha Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So you can repeat. Sutta Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that He personally incarnates Himself amongst the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. And when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana, but the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Srimad Bhagavatam is thus recommended by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. There's a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavat Purana who desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary cantos. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna, and thus, more foolishly than intelligently, they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specifically told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. Krishna and his pure devotees, like the Pandavas, are on the same plane. Krishna is not without his devotees of all the rasas, and the pure devotees like the Pandavas are not without Krishna. The devotees and the Lord are interlinked, and they cannot be separated. Therefore, talks about them are all Krishna Katha, or topics of the Lord. So, alright, so Parikshito Ta Rajasheya Janma Karma Vilapanam Samstam Cha Panduputranam Vakshe Krishna Kato Dayam. So Om Gana Timananda Shah Granjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, we do understand that the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan are the most exalted pastimes. And the most exalted devotees of the Lord are the gopis. And actually, we can understand this by examining the material world. Now, how can we understand this by examining the material world? Well, we see what is the most degraded thing in this world, and then we can understand the most elevated thing in the spiritual world is the original source of the perverted reflection of this material world. Now, the most degraded thing in this material world is, unless it's sex, intoxication, like this, because we're not going to talk about meat eating. But illicit sex and intoxication. So you see this going on. Of course, in Kali Yuga, it's everywhere. Like Prabhupada commented, that in a previous Yuga you had a Jamil, who simply saw one Shudra and Shudrani embracing, and now it's all over the place. Even I was told that recently, in the Hare Krishna movement, when Brahmacharis and Brahmacharis greet each other, sometimes they hug. In Australia, at least. I mean, they're more advanced than you are here in New Zealand. I said, oh my God, what's happening here to the Hare Krishna movement? You know, you know, previously it was the opposite extreme. When a Brahmacharis or a Brahmacharini, he would run in the opposite direction. Not towards her, but anyway. And now, oh, Devi Dasi, how are you doing? You know, we had a good time on Sankirtan a few years ago. So, things have become quite liberal. And one lady told me that she said, like, really, it really disturbs me when people come up to me and, you know, the brahmacharis and the men, the other grasses, and they come up and hug me, you know, what's happening? So this is actually a sign of Kali Yuga. Because one of the important items is separation between men and women until they're married. Because anyway, so people fall in love, to summarize or translate that verse. And love means in the material world the same sort of consciousness you have when you're snorting cocaine. According to the scientists. This is not my opinion. This is scientific fact. So the most bewildering thing in this world is, you know, lust and, of course, intoxication. And so we see in Krishna's pastimes that Krishna and the gopis, they do both things. You know, there's loving exchanges between Krishna and the gopis, and I was just reading that sometimes they're getting intoxicated. They're drinking honey wine, not beer. New Zealand is famous for its beer, right? I'm not going to mention different types of beers, but anyway, it's true. And in Europe, of course, they have beer fests, like in Munich. Every year they have like a beer fest where everybody gets drunk in the whole city. So when Krishna gets intoxicated with nice honey wine, which is bona fide, not for the devotees, but it's bona fide for Krishna. And they're getting so intoxicated, Krishna and the gopis, that it's described that they, when they try to pour the honey wine into the cup, sometimes the cup is upside down. You know, it's like a wine glass sometimes. You can't really tell which side is meant to receive the liquid. One time a devotee did that with Prabhupada when he was giving Prabhupada water. He poured the water on the top, you know, on the bottom of the cup. And then went all over the table. Prabhupada said, this is foolish. So Krishna and the gopis, they were pouring this, and then sometimes they would pour on the wrong part of the glass. They were so intoxicated, their eyes were rolling. And then, of course, then you have Balaram, who is calling the Jamuna over because he's drinking the Varuni beverage and getting very angry at the Jamuna, and the Jamuna doesn't want to come over because she thinks he's just intoxicated. Anyway. So you have this intoxication. And of course, then you also have gambling. And Krishna and Radha, you hear all these stories when you go to Radhakund, how Krishna and Radharani, they have this chess game and they're gambling. Of course, what they gamble is not money, but it's, kisses and embraces. But anyway, so there's gambling going on, and what to speak, anyway, of the pastimes, even the Pandavas and the Kuru dynasty. There's gambling. So this is the most, bewildering part of the material world, bewildering activities in the material world. You know, we're not going to say demonic, because really that word is misused, overused, and people use that word for anything they don't like. Like if someone's driving a car and someone cuts you off, you call them a demon. Isn't it? Or if you're online in the airport, in the long line, and just get these demons out of the way, you know. So, but it's the most bewildering thing in this world. And so, the most bewildering or the most elevated thing, because of the nature of this world being a perverted reflection, upside down reflection, like the banyan tree reflecting on the body of water. The nature of the spiritual world is that's the most elevated thing. But the problem is, there's a problem with that being the most elevated, is that if you hear about it without being spiritually situated, you'll become degraded. Because you'll equate it with the most bewildering thing in this world. And you'll begin to feel bodily symptoms. Like if you hear about, if you hear about Krishna kissing the gopis kissing Krishna or whatever they're doing, then you'll actually, physiologically experience something. Just like if you look at something that, just like if you look at food that you like, you'll physiologically salivate. You understand? Like, even if I mention the name of food that you like, what's your favorite food? What's your favorite food?
Sweet rice.
Alright, sweet rice. And I said, really nice sweet rice, creamy sweet rice. And, you know, really, like, cool to the tongue and everything. Isn't your salivation occurring right now? Or pizza. Like, even though it's only 7:30 in the morning, you start salivating. It's just because it connects with something materially that you do. The prasadam is spiritual, but your body's not exactly spiritual yet. So therefore, whenever we have anything that's even the words of something, it just really connects with different physiological aspects of our body. What to speak of the subtle body. And the subtle body is the body of desires. And, so we have to be really careful what we contemplate. Contemplating sense objects, even verbally, mentally, whatever, attachment develops according to Krishna the Gita, and then from attachment comes good old lust, and lust you get angry. So, that's the first thing you learn in Bhagavad Gita, that you have to be like the tortoise or turtle, who withdraws his senses when there ever there any danger. I remember when I was young, we had a pet turtle. And if you ever pet turtle when you were young? Yeah. And you pick him up and you say, oh my little and he's going to, come on, open up, I want to see you. But he doesn't want to see you. And then when you leave him alone, you put some food out, but everything comes out. But otherwise he's like compact within his shell, which is his natural protection. It's called an exoskeleton. You know what an exoskeleton is? It means an external skeleton. There's an endoskeleton and an exoskeleton. For those of you who study biology, like lobsters, they have an exoskeleton too. And the demoniac people, there's that word again, eat the lobsters and then they crack their skeleton to take the flesh inside. Isn't that horrible? Ooh. Can you imagine someone cracking your skeleton and eating the flesh, Prabhupada said it's like eating pus. The people who take lobsters. They have lobsters here? Yeah. Crayfish. Those are tiny lobsters. So the point is, when we hear, or we connect in any way with these activities, then it evokes, a desire to do those things. So if you're not in the spiritual platform, you hear about Krishna's pastimes, you get putrefied instead of purified. That's Prabhupada's words, not mine. That, in other words, putrefied means to rot. In other words, you become more materially attached by hearing the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's really the problem. So therefore, you have to be qualified to hear these things. And one gets the qualification not simply by hearing the pastimes, although there's, you know, people nowadays have become very loose in hearing. Oh, and go to Krishna. Kamcha. So, one of our Gujarati friends. So, people become, right now, there's a large amount of devotees who jump up and they try to hear Krishna's pastimes and they haven't even learned ABCs, the Bhagavad Gita. They're not the body. You know, things like contemplating said subjects, attachment develops, etc., which I mentioned before. And as a result, their Krishna consciousness is just an illusion. For the most part, it's an illusion. And we were just studying some writings of one devotee who talked about, he was saying that, oh, you know, Prabhupada, you know, introduced me to Krishna consciousness, but I got my real, like, nectar from some, whether it was Babaji or someone else, you know, told me about my pastimes with Krishna, my siddhadeha, my spiritual form. It's all an illusion. Sometimes they even quote from different books, like the Shaiva Dharma, which I'm doing a summary study of now. I'm doing a course on it. The Jiva Dharma, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about when you get initiation from your spiritual master, you also get told who you are in the spiritual world at the same time. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? No, it would be deadly for your spiritual life. It'd be deadly. You know, because you would simply lose your enthusiasm to preach Krishna consciousness because you become more immersed in lusty desires. You know, if I were to tell the ladies, I mean, you're a gopi in the spiritual world, not even the men, but even the ladies, I mean, they'd probably rush up to the deities and kiss the deities and hug the deities or something instead of doing the archana like they're supposed to do. I even knew one lady who, I hate to say it, but she kissed Krishna, the deity. Can you imagine Muchi? You know, Muchi, like Prabhupada, you know, one of the first things you learn when you join the Krishna conscious movement, the mouth is dirtier than practically any other part of the body. Remember that? You all learn that. And so you go up to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with your material body, and you go, to him, I mean, huh? I mean, we're supposed to clean our hands after eating. You know, it's so Muchi. And actually, Prabhupada said at the beginning of the movement, we should clean our feet too after eating. But that's not always practical, especially here where it's so cold. You have to take your socks off, put your feet in the sink, you know. People wouldn't appreciate that, isn't it? I mean, we did that in the early days. There would be a hand washing sink in the prasada room, and devotees would walk up to the sink and put one foot on the floor and raise the other foot in the sink. And then someone else would come to wash their hands in the same sink, you know, it's just a little disgusting to do that. So, anyway, we have this, you know, this propaganda, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even in his book Jiva Dharma, talks about, you know, getting your spiritual name and form at the time of initiation. But that was for very qualified people. If you read Jiva Dharma properly, you'll see that the people who took initiation waited a long time, and they were very qualified, you know, completely renounced from the material world. Then they were ready to hear about these things. In other words, they were already beyond the platform of Nishta. Nishta, the platform of Nishta, it's one of the platforms in the progressive march of devotional service, you know. Ado Shradatata, Sadhu Sangota, Bhajana Kriya, Nartanavritti, and then Nishta Ruchi. Nishta means steadiness 24 hours a day. Not just in your sadhana, but 24 hours a day. I mean steadiness year after year, 24 hours a day. And who is like that? Who is steady? It's very rare to find such a person like that. I mean, completely steady. In the mind, too. Not only grossly, but in the mind. And then you're ready to hear about these things, and then you can do Raganuga sadhana, which is also practice. So, unfortunately, this propagation of Raghunuga sadhana and everything like that isn't very prominent in our society, people reading all these intimate books and everything like that. And Prabhupada said that this would stop the preaching in the Krishna Conscious Movement. People got too much into this. And then we simply understand under Prabhupada's direction that if we have good sadhana, serve Srila Prabhupada's preaching mission, then we will come to the right platform of devotional service. Krishna will take care of that. Ananyasthinte yanto mam yajinak paripasate tesham nityabhiyukta mam yogakshema vahamiham. This is from Bhagavad Gita. It says that those people who worship me, connected with the instructions of the spiritual master, with undeviating attention, ananyasthinte yanto mam, then I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. So in other words, Prabhupada takes care of that. And of course, we have to endeavor, but we have to endeavor to please Prabhupada according to the way he wanted to be pleased. Just like Prabhupada said, service means doing what the object of service wants. He gave the famous example that if the spiritual master asks for water and you bring him milk, even though one sense milk may be better than water, that's not service. That's mental speculation. And if you mentally speculate, then the guru is not happy. And if the guru is not happy, nagati katopi. And then whatever your destination is, it's unknown. You know, you don't reach the destination you're supposed to reach. So this is very important, as well as approaching the Bhagavatam in the way that Srila Prabhupada has elaborated on in his purport. From the lotus feet of the Lord, that's the first canto of the Lord, of the Bhagavatam. And then you approach gradually up to the smiling face, which is the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam teaches us through these wonderful stories of devotees and also of people who are attached to the material world. I mean, like in the Bhagavatam, you not only have pure devotees being elaborated on, their pastimes being elaborated on, but you have like people like Pururava. I don't know if many of you heard about Pururava, King Pururava. He was the king who actually had got married to Urvasi. I mean, Urvasi is like an apsara from the heavenly. Actually, she was the one who was created by Narayan Rishi, so she's the most attractive apsara. Apsara means heavenly society girlfriends. That's what Prabhupada said, what you call girlfriends, in Hindi we call prostitutes. Anyway, so that's another issue. So, she has a lot of boyfriends in the spiritual world. Not spiritual, the heavenly planet, sorry. So she was cursed to come down to the earth planet, because she disturbed Mitra and Varuna. And, you know, they saw her, and then, anyway, they felt very physiologically and psychologically disturbed because she was so beautiful. I mean, if she came into the room here, probably all the men would just, like, faint. You have to wake everyone up, like, 2 weeks later, you know. And all the women would feel envy. And they beat up their husbands later on. What did you do? You know, you're supposed to only think of me. I'm supposed to be like Sita Devi, and you're supposed to be like Ram. So anyway, getting back to the point. So she was cursed to come down to the Earth planet and marry this King Pururava, and she had a prenuptial condition. That means I'll stay with you. As long as I don't see you without clothes on, and I'll stay with you as long as you cook me everything in ghee, and I'll stay with you as long as you take care of my pets. And she didn't have pet dogs like people here have. She had lambs. You know what lamb is? The things that have wool on them. You have them here in New Zealand, lambs? Plenty. Yes, New Zealand wool, right? It's famous. And so she had some pet lambs. So he said, sure. Yeah, because he just like one time he saw her, and that was, you know, love at first sight, as they say. They have that saying, love at first sight. Because that's Cupid, it just goes boom. And so, and people worry about the Pied Piper, but it's worse than the Pied Piper. You know what the Pied Piper is? Yeah. He was the one who led all the kids away. Took all the kids away from their parents. Anyway. So he looked, they got married and they had a prenuptial agreement. Prenuptial means before marriage you have like a contract. They have that now. It's very common. If we get divorced, you get the house, you get the dog, I'm sorry, and I get the house. That's the agreement that should be made. So what happened is that Indra wanted her back because, he was missing her. And so what he did is he sent down the Gandharvas to make a trick. And the Gandharvas, what they did is they stole the lambs in the middle of the night. And when she woke up and found the lambs, her baby lambs gone, she yelled at her husband. He said, "You're just like a eunuch, you're just laying there." And he ran after the Gandharvas who had stolen the lamb. And, he was so much an illusion or ignorant because he just woke up. He ran outside without his clothes on. Like a rainbow festival or something. And then the Gandharvas who were hovering overhead, they had it like a spotlight. Like the helicopter sometimes, they have spotlights. And they shone the spotlight on this guy. And it was like as clear as day. He was just like completely naked. She saw that and she said, "Yeah, I'm out of here. You violated the agreement." And she went back to be with Indra. But he was so attached that he just kept wandering all over the earth looking for her. Finally he found her and she said, "Okay, one day a year you can be with me." And then the rest of the year he was just counting down. Like we have our, 364 days to Christmas, 363. So 364 days to Urbasi. He's marking his calendar like this. Going through, tearing off the sheets of the calendar. But it was too much for him. Just like the whole year and being depressed and just one day of happiness. That's the material world. So then what happened is she said, "All right, if you chant or do something, you'll get me for permanently." But she created, or they arranged to create, an artificial copy of her, a clone. But then, after a few moments, he understood it was just a clone, and he wasn't that interested. And so eventually, what he did is he performed this sacrifice because. Satya Yuga transformed to Treta Yuga. In Satya Yuga, you meditate, and if you're in love, you just meditate on your beloved. And in Treta Yuga, if you're in love, you perform a sacrifice to get your beloved. That's what the Bhagavad is, a Bhagavatam story. So he performed this sacrifice, and he conceived these two pieces of wood in the fire sacred. One was him, one was Urvasi. And then eventually he went back to Urvasi. Not back to Godhead. So not only do you have stories, the point I'm making is not only do you have stories of great devotees of the Supreme Lord, but you have stories of people completely in Maya, in the Bhagavatam. And also you have stories of people who were completely in Maya, and they got saved by chanting the holy name, like the Ajamil story. And you have stories of people being tortured by the Yamadutas. And you have story, and you have explanation of how people can be relieved from that in the sixth canto by chanting the Lord's holy names. And so you have all this interesting stuff that teaches you the very essence of Krishna consciousness and how to control your senses, what the deviations are. Because you have people who are very dedicated, like Bharat Maharaj, and all they did, just a little small thing, they just had a pet baby deer. And then he become a deer. So you have all these warnings there. Of course, he's a great devotee. But you have all these warnings there, depictions of hell, stories about how the Lord saves one, like the Gajendra Mokshana story, how the elephant Gajendra was saved. And then ultimately, the ninth canto which leads up to the tenth canto. With the ninth canto, of course, you have Lord Ram's pastimes and all those other nice pastimes in the ninth canto, and then tenth canto, and then you're ready by the time you've imbibed the instructions of the other cantos. So there's a progressive path, and if you don't follow that progressive path, you'll fall flat on your face in devotional service. Like Prabhupada gave this nice poem. He said, monkey, big belly, Ceylon, jumpy, melancholy. You understand? That if you're trying to imitate someone who's on a higher platform in devotional service, like if you're trying to imitate Hanuman, you try to jump over the ocean to Lanka, and then you may have a big belly like a monkey, but then you'll fall flat on your belly. You know, Ceylon jumpy, melancholy means you'll just be depressed. So therefore we follow the process given to us by the Acharya. So anyway, so any questions or comments about any of these points I made? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? That's a Samsung phone. I can tell by the sound. That's the only phone I know that whistles at you when it gets a message. Well, it's someone's. I don't know whose it is, but it's probably a Galaxy. I have one too, and the problem is, you know, I was on the airplane, sitting in the airplane one time. There's next to a lady, and it whistled. She thought I was whistling at her. I don't know, it's my phone. It can be very dangerous. No, I'm a sannyasi. I don't whistle at women. So, any questions? Yes.
So we're doing the 10th canto at the temple now.
Yeah.
What about people that just joined and haven't read the Bhagavatam and start coming to the Bhagavatam class here?
Well, the interesting thing is that Prabhupada's purports and the purports written by Prabhupada's followers help one understand the verses properly. Therefore, you know, you're protected. Or if you're reading the Krishna book, it's the same phenomena that occurs. So in that case, it's all right. Because really, within the purports of the other cantos. But if you try to approach the Bhagavatam without the purports, then you won't understand the Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. So therefore it's alright. I mean, obviously you can't just stay on the first canto in case some new devotee happens to join you. You know, just as soon as a new bhakta comes in, we just go back to 1-1-1 in the Bhagavatam. And you never get past the first chapter, especially if you're doing a lot of preaching, you know. It wouldn't be too practical. Yeah, so, but these things have to be explained properly. But as far as one's personal reading, yes, one should not avoid the first few cantos of Bhagavatam. So many nectarian stories. I mean, blah, 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 I mean, or the Pandavas is mentioned. I mean, it's full of wonderful pastimes and stories. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
If 10th canto is like sort of more elevated, then we have got Krishna book, which is the aspect of 10th canto.
Yeah.
And like we do distribution or things like that.
Yeah.
So how one can like take Krishna book as
well, exactly as I just explained to Arjuna, that Prabhupada's exposition of the stories in the 10th canto enable one to understand the proper philosophy. If it was just the stories without Prabhupada's explanation, it would be dangerous for people. I mean, people would just take it as a mundane love story. Or they would criticize the movement. I mean, you people are worshipping a god who has illicit sex life. I mean, and none of that, you know, 108 girlfriends? I mean, we can understand one or two. But and then 16,108 wives? I mean, phew. What kind of God is that? Of course, Prabhupada said, we can say, because he's God, 16,108 is nothing. He can be he has unlimited. Actually, everyone is Prakriti, and Krishna is a Purusha for everybody. So what's the problem? If you can do 16,108 wives, go for it. You are my blessings. But not less. Not less. No, not 15,999. No. You have 16,108. Okay? It's a deal. You have your wife's permission too. I mean, this whole area of New Zealand would be just your wives. And you have to pay mortgages on all the houses and everything like that. If you were Bill Gates, you could probably do it. Maybe. No, if you calculate it, it's just too much even for him. 16,108, and each one would have a house worth at least $300,000. I mean, I haven't done the mathematics, but it would be a lot of money. And each one would have to have a car, Mercedes, worth at least $100,000. Anyway, you have to pay for the schooling, private school for all the kids. Too expensive. Better be a sannyasi. Save money. So, any other questions or comments? Yeah, Thunderbird. Yeah. That's interesting. I haven't heard the 11th or 12th canto compared to any part of the body of Krishna. It's like the summary. There's actually a summary at the end of the Bhagavatam, the 12th canto. And I guess it's further information to support the 10th canto. It's like supporting information. Supporting information, supporting philosophy. And I haven't heard the 11th or 12th compared to any part of the Lord's body. Just the first 10 cantos. So any other questions? Yes.
So basically, if we are spiritually well established, we will be able to counteract most of this material imagination of the world.
Counteract? Yeah, we'll be able to be so, our consciousness will be so high that the material miseries will no longer be miserable for us. I mean, it's still going to be too cold here. I mean, you can chant all day long and you're still going to need what you need, right? And you're still going to get old. You know, you're still going to have gray hair. Well, you don't have gray hair anymore. Why do some people, when they get old, have gray hair and other people, their hair remains black?
It's
a big mystery. What's that?
To get the joke.
The reason is that they dye their hair. And some people, when they get old, they get red hair. Especially from India. It's interesting, isn't it? How the hair. And then some people, when they get old, they lose their hair. And some people, when they get old, they get hair transplants. So they get more hair. Yeah, so, anyway, so any other questions or comments?
I forgot, just to refresh the memory, there was another devotee who was meditating under the water for so many thousands
of... Well, there, Shobhari Muni was under the water.
And he got caught out too,
There were two fish.
Yeah, two fish. He saw two fish getting married. Swayambara. Then he jumped. No, but the real reason he actually had trouble is he actually offended the devotees. Yeah, offended Garuda. Because Garuda was taking fish from the Jamuna, and he cursed Garuda. So because he committed that offense, that's why the material desires developed. Yeah, not because of the fish. I mean, the fish were just the secondary cause. The primary cause was offenses against the devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He got married to 50 wives. And he uses yogic power to make himself handsome. Because after being in the water for so long, he was quite wrinkly. And seaweed all over him and things like that. I mean, I remember when I was young, you know, just a kid, I would go in the bathtub and, you know, take a bath, and after a while, the skin, even as a young person, gets really wrinkly. And so you can imagine, like, he was there for many hundreds of thousands of years, you know. He looked like a mess. And then he made himself handsome, and anyway, got married to 50 princesses. It's a nice romantic story, isn't it? So any other questions? Otherwise we have to end, we have to exercise. We have to do the Didi Puja and then exercise our bicycle ride of the day, which keeps us fit. Exercise, everyone should exercise every day, get sunshine. That's why you're getting sick and so many problems because you're not exercising. You're staying inside all day long and not exercising.
Nice day outside.
Yeah, it's a nice day. People should go outside and walk, exercise, run, get some sunshine. Even if it's the middle of the winter, you can do that. The sun here is always very strong because you don't have any ozone layer here. What?
We have ozone
layer. No, the ozone layer is being depleted.
Yeah,
it's holes in it. And so you get a lot of ultraviolet light coming in. So you got to be careful. Too much sun, and you should wear sunglasses when you're outside. That's important to protect your eyes from getting cataracts. A lot of people have cataracts here when they get old. Very common because of the sun.
A lot of skin cancer, melanoma.
Yeah, because the sun is very strong, very hot because of the holes in the ozone layer. Okay, on that happy note. Basically, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All right. Okay.